glad to get here. Give me a second.
He's already here.
I'm not, though. I'm a grateful alcoholic. My name is George.
Hey, George.
I really am. It's the 11th step, and there's a lot going on that I want to talk about, the 11th step, a lot of different ways we approach it. Last week, I said I probably wouldn't go over the first 10 steps again, but I probably will, because that's what I end up doing anyway. The first thing I want to say is I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have that right or that authority. No human being does. What I have is my experience through the steps, and I've done the steps many, many different ways. Due to sponsorship and other reasons, I've done them through the Big Book. I've done them through the 12 and 12. I've done them through the Big Book and the 12 and 12. I've done them through AWOL groups. I've done them through the 12 steps of Christianity. I've done them from the Back to Basics. I've done them. I did them through therapy. So I keep revisiting the steps at different levels in my recovery, and different things keep coming up. The one thing I do know is that the basic way I did the steps was another human being who did the steps with another human being. The other things were other journeys I took along the way. But the 11th step is the one step, and this is something I believe, that you can start at any time. And I think we do and we don't even know it. We walk in here, we go to a meeting, and we're powerless over alcohol. And our lives are unmanageable, or our lives are unmanageable, and when we drink, we get in trouble. I don't care what the thinking is. We were already starting on an 11th step the day we walked in here, because we start the meeting with a prayer, and we end it with a prayer. And there's a quiet moment in between, so we're practicing meditation already. You know, and then we come to believe in the second step that there's something working in these rooms. I like to talk about the second tradition, that a loving God was expressing himself through other people in these rooms. So that brought me to my second step, that second tradition. I started seeing people that were really enjoying life and were happy and were calm, and I didn't know how to steal it, manipulate it, rob it, or buy it. So I had to come in here and start getting the hope that I saw from the other people. Then came that third step, making a decision. I wasn't willing to turn my life into care of God as I understood him. And I'm really emotional about it today, because it was exactly 20 years ago tonight at 9 o'clock that I did my third step on 4th Avenue and Camino Real on the third step of a church, right after seeing the fireworks with my sponsor. So today is a very emotional day about that. I've been reflecting a lot about the prayer and meditation of where I did my third step, how I did my third step, how it was against everything I believed in, but I did it anyway. Then, you know, I get to that fourth step. So I made a decision, and when I was done, he said, "All right, are you willing to turn your willing life over to the care of God?" We understood him. I said, "Absolutely not," because I wasn't. And he said, "Well, are you willing to turn your life over to the care of the rest of these steps?" And I said, "Yes." And I turned around and I made a decision to do the rest of the steps. I went to that fourth step, and I did that immoral inventory I talk about, because it was immoral. I lived on the streets of New York for a bunch of years. I destroyed anything that was worthwhile in my life. I didn't lose anything. I gave it all away. I understood that when I did my fourth step. So I did that inventory, and then I knew I had to tell somebody about it. And there's some things on there I didn't want to tell anybody. I had some secrets. And that's what prevented me from writing it, but I did the actual action of writing. And the action of writing gave me the ability to move forward to that fifth step. So I wrote it all down, and I sat down with another man, the man who knew all the stuff anyway. And we sat on Palmetto Park Road overlooking the ocean. It's now closed off for 5 hours, and I dumped all my garbage on him, because it was garbage in those days. And it was my immoral inventory, because I did a lot of immoral things. And I found out I wasn't trying to get good anymore. I was learning to try to get well. That's what the fifth step was giving me. I believe we do a fifth step for three reasons. I've said that a couple of times. We go to God for understanding. We go to God for forgiveness. We go to ourselves for understanding. And we go to another human being to practice humility. And humility is only a clear recognition of who and what I was by an attempt to become something better. What it means is getting right-sized. It means being okay in my own skin. I wasn't. So I went to this other man, and there was some things I kept out and figured I wasn't going to tell him about that anyway. I told him my biggest secret, because I couldn't write, and that was my spiritual blockage, I like to call it. And he told me I needed a spiritual enema, and told him what went on, and I got my system cleaned up, and I wrote my 28-page immoral inventory. And when I did my fifth step, I thought I had dumped everything. And after we were done, he said, "If there's anything you think of in the next week or two, just let me know, and we'll we'll talk about it. You know, you don't. It doesn't all have to come out right now. We'll do another writing on it. And I remembered in high school, I took out a BB gun in my house at a party when I was 18 because somebody was making too much noise and I was tired of his mouth, so I shot him in the leg with it. Just things we did as kids. And I didn't put that on my inventory, so I went and I told him about that. But there was things like that that came up after my inventory. That wasn't such a big deal, but I made a big deal in my head. And if I kept it a big deal and kept it a secret, it was going to keep me sick, and that sickness was going to get me drunk. So I did that, and I got to that sixth step, and the sixth step was for me to stop doing what was wrong, and the seventh step to start doing what was right for me. My morality will get somebody else drunk. I say that all the time. And I was given some things to write, all my negative thoughts and actions, which my sponsor was kind enough to tell me what they were. And then to do the opposite in seven, start doing what was right for me. And that's what I did. And then I had to write an A-step list. And a couple of weeks ago, I talked about that A-step. The way it was given to me is don't throw away your four-step. If you throw away your four-step, if your sponsor tells you to do it, I'm not here to argue about how you do your steps. Just listen to the person taking you through them. If he's been sober and he has somebody that sober around him that got him through them, there ain't no wrong way. The only way is not doing it. The only wrong way. So I sat with my sponsor, and he told me to make a list for my fourth step of everybody I owed money to. One kind of list was financial. The other was the emotional stuff that I did. And the list was pretty extensive. And then I broke it down to categories, who I would, who I wouldn't, who I was never going to, and prayed on it. And slowly but surely, 19 years later, I still have names on that list. I was looking at it the other night. They all aren't gone. Just because I got sober doesn't mean that they're gone. And in the eighth and ninth step, I tell my sponsees all the time, leave room in the bottom, because you don't think you're going to offend somebody while you're in recovery. You're wrong, because you're still human. You're going to make mistakes along the way. You're going to hurt people along the way. And that's what the eighth and ninth step is there for, to clean it up. Mm-hmm. Last week, I came in here, and we were talking about step 10. Go back to where we left off. I didn't want to be here last week. And I think I made that pretty clear to everybody when I started last week, that I really didn't want to be here. I wasn't feeling good. I knew I was going to the doctors the next day. I also know my body pretty well, and I knew my breathing was giving me a problem, and I knew they weren't going to take me off the medication. I've been on after fighting to come off of it for 4 years, and there was a sense of guilt that I had about what's going on inside of me. It has nothing to do with anybody else. It's about me now. Get to talk about me on the 10th step. And that's what I did last week, talked about all the things that led me through my 10th step. What was really going on there is, I was talking to somebody with a lot of time who I respect very much so on Monday, because I've been struggling with this. I've been struggling with this since before Mother's Day, since when I got sick again. And what ended up happening was when I sat down with somebody and we were talking about this, what I've come to is that I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do physically. And there's a part in the big book that's ringing in my head. It's just ringing in my head, the only way not to say it, where it says that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Now, I feel pretty good mentally, and spiritually I feel pretty good. I'm okay. I don't know what pretty good means in the spiritual world, but I'm pretty good. You know, I'm not the angry person I was. I don't snap at people ways. So I feel that I'm pretty good, but the physical is not there. So in my mind, show you how our mind works. This thought came to my mind, because I'm not well physically, then I'm not spiritually centered, so I'm not really well. And I can't get over why I am where I am at, and why do I have to carry this burden. That's a form of guilt. But that's a form of false guilt. Because there is a truth that I know by sitting and talking to somebody and praying on it and looking for a solution to it. The truth is that I did everything that was laid out in front of me by the doctors, by my sponsor, and did a walk down that road, and there is really nothing else I can do. If someone is born crippled like I was, for the first 18 years of my life, I wore braces and corrective shoes and was at the doctors and had pictures taken, and I was in medical magazines because I was the first one to wear the baby braces that they wear today. They didn't break my hips and cast me. So what ended up happening was I've always had a physical thing, and I've always dealt with doctors, and that was my normal. And now I'm reading the thing about if I'm spiritually fit, I shouldn't feel that way. In my mind, this is my mind now. And I had this conversation, and the difference is I did everything I could, and there's certain things that will never be changed because they're actually real. Just this. And it changes my quality of life. And when my quality of life changes, I don't feel like I'm a part of I'm now separated from all of you. So when I have moments like that, I was told to act as if, go and do it anyway. That's why I was here last week. So that was why I was in the mood I was in last week. And not that it means anything to you, but it means a lot to me that I can sit in a room and tell everybody where I'm exactly where I'm at. And know that I'm not alone. That was the thing, because whatever I went through in my recovery, whether it was when I came down with hepatitis C or I came down with cancer, or when I cut my hand off with a circular sore, or when I have other medical problems with my lungs like I have, or my immune system goes down like it does, there's somebody in here who's done it before and did it without drinking. And my job is to seek them out. 11th step, sought to improve our conscious contact with God. And I see God in people. So I get to this 10th step, and I'm doing all this stuff, and it's stuff. I'm doing work. And like I said last week, steps 1, 2, and 3 are you come in here and you show up. They told me those were reflection steps. You show up. 4 through 9, we give up by doing the inventory and the work that's laid out before us. The amends process, all that is give up stuff. We're giving something of ourselves up so we can be healthier people. And 10, 11, 12 is the grow up or the spiritual growth steps. I don't like to call them maintaining, because if I maintain where I was, I'm going to drink again. And I don't want to drink again. I got to grow. Either you grow or you go. Heard that in one of my first meetings. So I do a lot of things to keep growing, even though I feel stagnated at times, even though I don't think this program is working for me. And that was where I was last week when I got to step 10 with you guys. So we talked about the 10th step a lot last week. And in the 10th step, it says, there's something that talks about restraint. I was doing my best not all this time not to snap and tell people exactly where I am, the way I was feeling. Because I would probably take it out sideways. Calls misdirected anger is what we used to talk about. And it says, we avoid quick-tempered criticism, furious power-driven argument. The same goes for sulking or silent scorn. And they are emotional booby traps, greater pride or vengefulness. And those are the things I got to watch out for. Because my pride gets in the way, and I don't want to tell you what's really going on. And if I don't tell you what's really going on, I don't find a solution. And if I don't find a solution, I'm going to drink again. When I want to get even with somebody, because I want to hurt them, I hurt afterwards. I don't hurt when I'm doing it. I never did. I have the after effect. If I hurt you, then later I feel bad. So if I don't hurt you, I won't have to feel bad. It's real simple. So I had to look at those kind of things. I had to watch out what I'm setting myself up for. And it talks about... there's a guy in the 10th step that talked about, he said, someone who knows AA as well once remarked that pain was the cornerstone of all spiritual growth. How hardy we AAs can agree with him, because we had to know the pains of drinking before sobriety, and emotional turmoil before serenity. Now, I know what it is to get sober. I believe it's a lot easier to stay sober than to get sober. That's just my opinion. People will tell you it's easier to stay sober than get sober. I don't know. For me, I just know it's real easy to stay sober. Easier to stay sober than to get sober. It was real hard for me. It took me many years before I even tried to get here, because I always wanted to stop and never could. When I stopped, it was over. It was over. I didn't know how it was over. I knew I was going to be all right. One of the first stories I want to tell in the 11th step. And then, you know, I know that all that turmoil and all that confusion that was going on within me last week, the other side of that, because of prayer and meditation, brought me this peace of mind that I have today. I don't know where it is, but it's there somewhere. No, it put me in a much better frame of mind by the next morning. Like I said, I'm going to get up tomorrow. It's going to pass. I remember a guy, when he used to come in here, they used to say, this too shall pass. The good passes, the bad passes. It gets better, it gets better. My experience is it gets better, it gets worse, it gets better, it gets worse. It passes. Then it gets real. And there was a point in my recovery, it got very real. When my children were taken away from me, when I came down with these illnesses, it got very real. And then it got worse, and then it got better, and then it got different. And today I say my recovery is really different, because I'm not the person that walked in here. There has been a change that happened to me, and it's really been prayer and meditation. That's really where the bedrock comes. There are some promises in the 10th step, and we're going to go right into 11, because I really didn't want to dwell on 20 as much as I did, but I have to, because last week, I'm going to tell you why. In the 11th step, the first thing the big book says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in the matter of prayer. Better men than us have been using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It's easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. That's what the big book says, and I'm going to get into that in a minute. But there's some promises that we get out of the 10th step. We've been reading about promises in each step, each week. We enter the world of the spirit. We cease fighting anything or anyone. That's a nice one. Even alcohol. Sanity will return. We're seldom interested in liquor when we recoil from it as though from a hot flame when we're tempted by it. We react sanely and normally. We see that a new attitude toward liquor had been given us without any thought or part or effort by us. We're not fighting it, nor are we avoiding it. Alcohol, that is. We feel, though, we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. And it says, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. I can't tell you when that happened for me. I can tell you that when I was leaving detox, you know, with prayer and meditation, I talked about going to meetings. I was in a treatment center in upstate New York, and when I left there, all I know is the day before I left, there was a deacon. He put his hand on my head. I knew I was going to be okay. Said a little prayer. Usually there's a lot of people in a big circle. It was me and one other person, and this guy put his hand on my head. I didn't know, not of my religion, not of my belief system, not of anything I knew of, but I knew I was going to be okay. I did not know how I was going to be okay, but at that moment, I knew I was going to be okay. And then my journey started. And I ended up down here, and I got a sponsor, and I went to meetings, said the prayers, did the readings, and I still didn't know how I was going to be okay. And I got to this 10th step. And one of the things about the 11th step, in step 11, my sponsor had me every Sunday morning going to an 11th step meeting at 10 in the morning. Did I hate that meeting? And I can say it that way, because I used to have to go in there and see these people that would sit there like this, at peace, and I'd be... What are they up to? What's going on? You know, I just could not picture anybody being that calm with that much peace going on in them. I thought they were sleeping, and how do you stay quiet for 5 minutes? I mean, my head was just too busy. And I went to that meeting, and I went because I was told to go. I didn't think it was working. The 11th step is a step I think you could start as soon as you walk in here by reading, doing forms of meditation, by prayer. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Those are the things that I was told real early on. We say two prayers, and my sponsor used to, his favorite saying to me is, it doesn't matter what we do from prayer to from the Serenity Prayer to the Lord's Prayer. He said, George, it's going to matter what you do from the Lord's Prayer to the next Serenity Prayer. We live a better sermon with our feet than with our mouth. Watch their feet. I was always told, watch their feet. And that's what I believe in. I watch other people's feet, so I don't want to be around. So it tells us in the big book, after that little statement, what to do when we retire at night. You know, it says there's some valuable suggestions about step 11. And it says when we retire at night, we take an inventory. So what it's really doing, step 11 in the big book, is telling us to go back and do a 10-step inventory. So we're actually, our first deal with meditation is to write what we did through a day at the end of a day so we can reflect on it so we can see where we're at. That's a form of meditation. Didn't know that for a long time. So it says when we retire at night, we constantly review our day. Where were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves we should discuss with another person? Were we kind and loving to all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Were we thinking what can pack what do for others and packing the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, more of a reflection, or it would diminish our usefulness to others. After making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be. Then it says what to do in the morning on awakening. It tells us what to do during on awakening. We think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we go, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking we be the force of self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can use our will, because that's what he gave us, our mental facilities, with assurance, for God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed in a higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. There we are with my motives again. Going back to the beginning of what is my motive about all this. Why am I really here? I'm here because I can't drink safely. I thought I was a pretty good guy, and my perception of me is not who I was. I have a very warped perception of all the good things I did in life that I never really did. A lot of them are, the doctor's opinion says, were the fancy the real. There's a lot of fancy things that I believed I did that I never accomplished, and there's a lot of things I accomplished that I'll never give myself credit for. It's just the way I perceive myself, that warped perception of self. In thinking about the day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. We ask God for an inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and we take it easy. Now, if you're like me, you don't know how to relax or take it easy. I'm always on the go with something. I don't care how still my head is still moving 90 miles faster than my feet are. And it took me a long time to learn to slow it down. And just because I'm here a long time doesn't mean it slowed down. I have better tools to deal with it. We often surprise how right answers come when we try this for a while. What used to be the hunch and the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of mind. Being still inexperienced, we've just made a conscious contact with God. It is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pray for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find our thinking in time will be placed on a more useful plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. I don't really take actions anymore, even though if I think it's a great idea, without stepping back and practicing that restraint we talked about in the 10-step, reflecting on it, praying on it, running it through another, and then I'll usually take an action. It doesn't mean that I still don't go down by the store and see something I shouldn't be spending money on and spend the money on it, or go spend money on something I don't need, or go do some other stupid activity because I'm still human. I'll do those things, but I have tools to correct them when they show up. It says, we ask especially for the freedom of self-will, and we're careful not to make requests for ourselves. I will tell you, I've prayed to have so much money so I can take care of my kids from a long distance. See, that's really a selfish motive. I'm trying to bargain with God. So it tells us in the 11th step that we ask for God's will for us and the power to carry that out. I don't think God's going to drop a load of money on me just so I can say I'm going to take care of my kids, and as soon as it comes, make another deal with God, because I found bargaining with God in prayer and meditation doesn't work. And how do I seek to improve what I have? I didn't know what I had. There's a big assumption when we get to the 11th step, and that's the assumption is that we already have a contact with God. And I had a contact with God, and I like to do things with stories. I was thinking of a bunch of stories that happened to me since I've been here. I talked about doing my third step on tonight, which was an event, something I'll never forget. But there was an event that happened to me when I first moved into the halfway house that I was at. I was on Congress, and God, I guess I was up near a military in job at some place looking for a job, and I missed the bus back to the halfway house, the fractional house I was living at. And I started walking, and it was about 90 degrees, and I'm angry, and I was using the Serenity Prayer. I'm saying the prayer over and over and over again. I'm brand new. I'm like a month into the program, maybe, and I'm cursing, and I'm angry, and I'm hot, and I'm sweaty, and I turn around and said, all right, if you're up there, would you send me a sign? And I'm walking, and I'm saying the Serenity Prayer. I must have said about 100, maybe 150 times. All of a sudden, I hit beep, beep. Turn around, and it's a guy by the name of Rusty B, who pulled up next to me and says, don't you live in the halfway house? Did you get in a car? I'll take you back to the halfway house. Now, that was not me. Nice, that happened. Never saw it. Went by me. Now, God has sent me angels, and I like to talk about angels in that 11th step. My mom was dying. I talked about my mom, and I was working in a movie theater, and I was cleaning the strip lights of the that are on the aisles. I was fixing them. And this particular theater I worked at, the lights hadn't been touched for 8 years. And when I popped it, it was still sealed. And in there was a gummy bear. And in that gummy bear, I thought it was a dime. I took it and threw it in my pocket and threw out the gummy bear. I found 10 cents. Fixed the lights, went about my business, and started going home. And on the way home, there was a religious medallion in there. Now, that thing hasn't been opened since the theater was open. How did it get there? Get a phone call the next day that my mom wasn't doing well. And went to go visit my mom, and there was a sign from God, I would like to say. And then I spoke with my mom, and she was ready to go home, and my sister wasn't ready to let it go. And I had that conversation with my sister, and that night, which was Mother's Day, my mom took her last breath, and I got to watch that. And that was a gift from God. And then I went outside the next day, and I'm sitting outside, and I'm watching the sunrise or the sun outside with my sisters in the house. And there was two clouds, and they parted, and I don't tell this story often. Somehow or other, I knew that I was being held by the hands of God. And unless you have an experience like that, it's very hard to explain. And for those of you who do, I don't have to explain it, who had those kind of experiences. For those of you who don't, stick around, there are miracles about to happen. And that's a fact that I know for a fact. I've watched miracles like that all the time. And then I tell other stories about my mom, things that happened while she was alive, that God has always been there. And that's all through my prayer and meditation, because I get up every morning and I ask God to show me what he wants me to be, what he wants me to do, and how can I be a better George today. I was struggling with my 11th step, seeking to improve. I was struggling with my 11th step. There was a spiritual retreat. There was a spiritual retreat going on, and I had stopped praying, and I stopped meditating. And I was on the spiritual retreat, and when I was going to the spiritual retreat, and there was a bookstore, and in the bookstore, I stopped by with one of my sponsees on my way to the retreat, and in this bookstore there was a book, and I liked the book, the name doesn't matter, and the book was sitting on the counter, and I looked at it, I liked the cover, I picked it up, and in it was prayers by either Abe Lincoln, religious people, non-religious people, so there was all kinds of different prayers in there, and in it was a bibliography of other books. I went to that retreat, I had that book, and that became my 11-step journey book, I like to call it. Like I said, I struggle a lot with getting my head quiet. There's a certain form of meditation. It's called contemplative prayer. Contemplative prayer is a form where you allow to think during meditation instead of being empty, because I don't know how to be empty. And it's like sitting on the edge of a lake and watching boats go by and don't jump in on the boat. My problem is I like to jump in on the boat and figure out what they got in the storage unit. So I started to just let it go by. And slowly but surely, I just watched the boats go by. I lived in a halfway house. That's one of the books that came out of that. It's a guy by the name of, doesn't matter. Thomas Keating is the writer in that book. And he was an abbot. And it came out of the religious section. And it's not something. Then I read other people. There's a book that I had my sponsees read in the 11th step. It's called Find a Quiet Corner. Another one is Just Listen. How to listen, find a quiet corner, teaches you to get a little spot where you're comfortable for your prayer life and set up a little thing and have a little thing, making God boxes. All this was part of my 11th step throughout my other step work, and I didn't see it coming. See, the God box of writing letters to my kids without my kids ever knowing it and sending it to myself. 14 years later, that was answered. That was a prayer that was started back in 1994 that didn't get answered until 2008. So God answers prayers, I believe. He has three answers. It's yes, no, and wait. And I always believe God says wait before he says yes or no. And in my case, he has me waiting a long time for a lot of things. I was in these rooms, and there was a room that I came in that had a pair of praying hands. I said, oh, this is religious. This isn't for me. So my sponsor says, well, if you're going to seek to improve your conscious contact with God, you better find out what that's about. So what are you talking about? He says, find out the story of the praying hands. He says, well, I find out the story of the praying hands. I see it all over. They have it in all the churches. They're there. He says, no, it has nothing to do with that. What do you mean it has nothing to do with that? He says, go find out the story of the praying hands. So I went on a search, seeking to improve my contact. And the story of the praying hands is two German guys. They're both students. They both want to be artists. One says to the other, listen, I'll go to art school and you work. And when I finish art school, I'll start going to business. And we'll have enough money, and then you can go to school. And they said that was the deal they made. First guy goes off to school. The other guy's doing labor. First guy finishes school, sells some artwork, goes to his friend and says, okay, now it's your turn. And he said, I can't go to art school. And he says, why? And the guy picks up his hands. They're crippled from the labors of cleaning and taking care of everything so his friend can go to school. And the guy felt terrible. And one day he walked by his room, and he saw his friend praying. And he made a sculpture of his hands praying as a commitment to what his friend did for him. So it had nothing to do with religion. It had everything to do with his friend being crippled and praying. So when I saw that, I started to open my mind a little more. It says we look to see where religious people are right. We stop doubting the power of God because it's everywhere. So that was another one of those stories that I had a was on my journey that, you know, changed the way I perceive prayer and meditation. I told you I was struggling with this prayer and meditation thing, and I went to my sponsor, and he says, you know, if you're struggling so much about it, let me ask you a question. Did you ever do your fifth step? I said, yeah, I did my fifth step. What do you mean? Of course I did. I did it with you. You know I did it. He said, well, what did you do when you got done? He said, went home, I took the book down, I sat still and reflected for an hour. He says, then you know how to meditate. See, I forget. I'm looking for this white light experience that never happened to me. So I've learned that meditation happens to me when I sat outside of the halfway house that I left and moved into a sober house. It started happening for me when I sat by a pond and watched a cardinal every morning fly by, my favorite little cardinal. I don't know why he flew by that particular house, but we had a little pond there and he'd fly by. And then I learned to, my sponsor said, I want you to be still for 30 seconds. Just be still. And in 30 seconds, I learned to be still for 30. It took me a long time to get to 30 seconds. Then it became 60 seconds. Then it became 90 seconds. And every morning I get out and I needed to be reading my big book or other spiritual literature, and I would be trying to improve a contact that I didn't even know I was having. And slowly but surely, time got longer. And I learned about contemplative prayer, and then I would go home at night, and I was listening to discs of meditations. I heard that too. I was listening to discs of different speakers of meditation. Couldn't have friends in the room. They will never let me live that one down. As I was listening to these different discs, I could not stay awake for the first half hour. It's a half hour disc, and I could not stay awake through it. I would have slept through it for the first 5 months of my listening to it. And eventually I was able to listen to the whole disc and learn to do a guided meditation. So I was finding meditation all over the place. My first meditation I really had was when I walked on the beach at sunset, listening to the waves rolling. So the meditation has always been in my life. Reading a book. Now, there's about 60 people in this room, maybe a little more than that right now. We each sit in this room and we each find a different way to pray and meditate. They all work. So getting to meditation, whether we do it structured or unstructured, reflection, reading, listening to music. I used to burn candles. Now, I used to look to improve my conscious contact by dropping a couple of tabs of acid and a few shots of beer. That is not a spiritual experience. It's an experience, but it ain't spiritual. And it's one I don't want to live again. Now, getting there, getting away from that and trying to turn to the spiritual realm was very hard for me. Because I didn't think I can have that same kind of thing going on. And I realized that the change was already there. What was giving me a hard time is I was resisting the change. So change is not my problem, it's my resistance to change. And the 11th step is the toughest step for me to work with because it's not as evident to me as the other steps were. So here I am in step 11, struggling, fighting, trying to figure out which end was right. And it says there's a direct linkage of among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven. See, I didn't have them all locking up. I had each part of it, and I was doing a little part of this and a little part of that, but I didn't have it as a whole. The result is an unshakable foundation for life. Now we may be granted a glimpse of what the ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom, and we may be confronted and assured that our own destiny in that realm will be secure for as long as we try, however faultingly we try, to find and do the will of our Creator. The idea is to keep doing it. The key to the 11th step is about practice. If I don't get up every morning and pray, then I'm going to move away from my prayer life. If I don't take the time to meditate, I'm not going to have that time to listen. And I don't believe that prayer is just listening to God. Meditation is just listening to God. I believe prayer, and I don't always believe prayer is talking to God. I believe sometimes when I talk to God, I'm meditating. Because I'm speaking to Him in a way that is at peace with myself and letting God. There's all kinds of prayers. There's prayers of want, and there's prayers of praise, and there's prayers for asking, and there's prayers of supplication, and there's all kinds of different kinds of prayers we can have. There's continual prayers. That we just keep praying, and there's the rosary, and there's the Jewish religion of laying tefillin. I mean, I can go down a list of a whole lot of religious practices where a lot of prayer is needed. But those are rituals. When I talk to God in the way that I'm at opened enough that I'm at peace, then I'm meditating. I'm just not speaking to him. He's hearing me. And I don't know if he's going to answer me, but I know he's hearing me. I always say I talk to my old sponsor, Bob, every day, which I do. And I speak to my sister and my mom and dad. They're no longer here. But I talk to them every day. They have not answered me. And I'll get a little worried if they do, because I'm in the wrong place again. But to date, they haven't answered me. But I speak to them every day, because I'm trying to keep that contact, that channel. I mean, I've seen them show up in different ways. Things have happened that are just miraculous to me. It says we start with a good prayer, and they use this, the prayer of St. Francis. You know, the St. Francis prayer is one of my favorite prayers. It talks about that, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there is shadows, I may bring light, that where is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather comfort than be confident, to be understood than to understand than be understood, to love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by dying that one is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one is awakened to eternal life. The dying that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous in the 11th step is not a physical death. It's letting go of the old self and coming into a new spirit. That's kind of a wonderful rebirth. And the 11th step is about rebirth, about being reborn. It talks about laying on a beach and looking at the sun or the wind or watching a fireplace. However you get there, it doesn't matter. The idea is that you practice getting there, at least for me. Meditation is something that can always further be developed. It has no boundaries, either in width or height. So that means that it's limitless. The only thing that limits us is our inability to participate with it. I'm not one of those that walks around and saying Om on a mountaintop, and I'll never be one of those. I used to want to be one of those, but I know that's not realistic. I was telling the story of the guy who goes to Carnegie Hall, and it's about the practice of meditation. He's a great violinist, and I don't know how many people have heard that story. And it says, he says, you know, if I stop practicing for one day, I'll notice the change. And if I stop practicing for 1 week, my wife will notice the change. And if I stop practicing long enough, all of you will notice the change, and I won't be at Carnegie Hall anymore. Same thing I believe is true with prayer and meditation. If I stop practicing these two little aspects of this program, slowly but surely, you will notice the change. First, I'll notice the change, because I'm not doing what I should. Then you guys are going to notice the change. And eventually, I won't be sitting in this room. So this is just as important to me when I used to get up every morning and say my third step and my seventh step and the 11th step prayer, because that's what I was told to do. I wasn't sure why I was doing it. Today I know why I'm doing it. I'm doing it so I can keep this contact, this channel open to something that I still don't know what he wants from me. I know what I want, though. I want to be closer to this, because I have never been happier or more at peace because of this process up to this point. And as bad as things get, and they get bad, like everybody else, there's a certain peace that I never had. There's the part of the fourth step that always rings out at me, where it says, we now learn to match serenity with the calamity. I didn't know how to be serene. If somebody snapped at me, I snapped back. I didn't know how to step back. I didn't know how to count to 10. I didn't know how to be kind and considerate and think maybe they're having a bad day or something else is going on in their life. I didn't know how to do any of that. I learned that in here. And it's my 11th step that reinforces me doing that. I struggle right now with a medication that makes me very angry. I'm on steroids. Not shooting them. I'm taking them the right way. For you guys who know what I'm talking about. And they do make me very angry. And I have to be very on guard. I have to be very vigilant that I don't come out sideways. I don't have misdirected anger. So I spend a little extra time in prayer meditation. It says that we also fall into another temptation. We form ideas of what we think God wants for other people. I mean, I could tell you all kinds of absurd ways I've prayed. based on the supposition that we know what God's will is for that person we pray for. We ought to pray that God's will, whatever it is, be done for those people as well as for ourselves. So what I do now is when I get up in the morning, I say, okay, God, I don't know what your will is, but whatever it is, let me adapt mine to yours. Give me the strength to see that. One of the other things I do today, I believe that whatever God puts in front of me, whoever he puts in front of me, whatever they have to say, that's God's will for me. All right? When I start questioning that stuff of, you know, getting a phone call at 1 o'clock in the morning when somebody's in trouble and not wanting to answer the phone, there's a reason, meaning that phone is ringing. It's not because they like me a lot of times. A lot of times they want to yell at me or they want some help or they don't want help or they just want to vent. They can call a million other people. Why did they call me? I have no idea. I'm not that powerful. I don't think I can fix anybody. You know, I learned that a long time ago. But if there's a reason I put that person in my life, and sometimes it's to remind me where I don't want to go back to. I've sat on the phone and spoken to some people, and I don't want to go back to where they are. And it's a reminder to me that how precious this gift is. And it is a gift. In AA, we found the actual good results of prayers beyond question. They are matters of knowledge and experience. So here again is that practice. If I want experience, I need to practice. All of us who have persisted have found strength not only of our own. They have found wisdom beyond their usual capacity, and they have increasingly found peace of mind which can stand firm in the face of difficult circumstances. I've been told at 2001 that my lifespan wasn't very long. I was told in 2008 my lifespan wasn't very long. I was told in 2010 my lifespan wasn't very long. Yet I'm still here. And through it all, I have a peace that's beyond anything I know. I am ready for whatever's coming down the road. I don't know how I'm ready for it, but I know I'm at peace with whatever comes down the road. I have friends of mine that say, you know, you shouldn't talk that way. And it's a fact. I mean, I've been through some very heavy medical issues. They come and they go. But through it all, a drink or a drug doesn't look good to me. What looks good to me is a better understanding of my relationship with God. And I'm at peace with it. So the burdens that I carry are there for a reason, because what they do is help me help someone else. Because if I can overcome them, so can anybody else. So those are tough things, because I deal with stuff that it's mine. A lot of people wouldn't know it if they looked at me. So meditation was tough. Then there was another part of this called guidance. We don't talk about that at all down here in South Florida. But guidance is something that was done in the 30s, it's done in Akron, Ohio still. It's done in the back to basic courses, which is not approved AA stuff, but they do it anyway, because it really comes from Dr. Bob's friend. And here's what we talk about. It's a guy by the name of Johnson Batterson, who was a personal friend of Dr. Bob's in 1930, wrote this little pamphlet, and it's called How to Listen to God. And in it, it tells you what you do. It tells you that these are the conditions: to be quiet and still, to listen, to be honest in every thought that comes, to test your thoughts to be sure that they came from God, and then to obey. And the way they do it in Akron and in other parts is they use the four absolutes. You write down your thoughts, you get a sharing partner, you talk to that other person about what you write, and then you put it to the four absolutes. Is it absolutely pure? Is it honest? It is unselfish? And is it loving? And if it's of those things, it's of God. Now, I've been writing for a long time. Most of the stuff I write are good intentions or good thoughts for other people and other thoughts. Maybe a half a dozen times in all the time I've been doing this. Is it from God? Not saying the other things are bad, but they're not from God. So it takes a while to separate that, and that's why they had sharing partners. And that's why it says in our literature that we go to people of all religious people, seek other spiritual people to run what they think is coming from God, because we can twist it in our own mind. Last week I read that little pamphlet, the AA's of Spirit, the little poem that was written in 1957, and the 11th step was very tough for me, because I didn't see what was going on, even though I was doing it, and there's a lot of times I still don't see what's going on. But by doing the 11th step, certain things have come to me. And what has come to me, out of the negative, going into the 11th step, is that I was rebelling.
I was still objectionable. I was obstinate. I was scoffing. I was scared. I was full of despair. I was resistance towards it. I was self-serving. I had all kinds of presumption. I was sad. I had doubt that it would work for me. I was in pain. There was a lot of faults, and there was a lot of distortion. So as I get to this step and the negative, how do I get out of it? Well, my experience tells me, and that's what I have is my experience, nothing else, tells me that by doing this, these things start falling from me. I don't know how they fall from me, but they do. And one of the things in the 12 and 12 says, because it's always a burden, everything's a burden or a problem. And what the 12 and 12 has given me, he says that every one of us will report out of every season of grief and suffering. When the hand of God seemed heavy or unjust, new lessons for living were learned. New resources of courage were uncovered. And finally, inexplicably, the conviction God can and God does move in mysterious ways, wonders to perform. Through all I've been through, I've gotten a relationship with a God that I didn't understand when I got here, that I didn't want to have. Through all the problems of life, people have showed up and had the face of God on them through the love, consideration, courtesy, and kindness they've shown me when I didn't deserve it. Or in my mind, I didn't deserve it. I don't know if I did or not. Again, there's me trying to judge what I believe God wants for me. Those things were difficult for me. But the peace that comes from the practice is something that until you do it for a while, you don't understand. I want to end with a little reading, and if everybody would just sit back and see if I can do this without screwing up the wording. We begin our prayers by disposing our body. Let it be relaxed and calm, but inwardly alert. The root of our prayer is interior silence. We may think of prayer as thoughts or feelings expressed in words, but this is only one expression. Deep prayer is to lay aside of thoughts. It is the opening of the mind and the heart, body and feelings, our whole being, to God, the ultimate mystery, beyond words, thoughts, and emotions. We do not resist them or suppress them. We accept them as they are and go beyond them. Not by effort, by letting them go, all go by. We open our awareness to the ultimate mystery, whom we know by faith is within us, closer than breathing, closer than thinking, closer than choosing, closer than consciousness itself. The ultimate mystery is the ground in which our being is rooted, the source from whom our life emerges at every moment. We are totally present now. Our whole being, in complete openness, in deep prayer, the past and the future, time itself, are forgotten. We are here in the presence of the ultimate mystery. Like the air we breathe, this divine presence is all around us, within us, distant from us, but never separate from us. We may sense this presence drawing us from within, as touching of our spirit and embracing it, or carrying us beyond ourselves to pure awareness. We surrender this to this attention of interior silence, tranquility, and peace. We do not try to feel anything, reflect about anything. Without effort, without trying, we sink into this presence, letting everything else go by. Let love alone speak. The simple desire to be one with the presence, to forget self, to rest in the ultimate mystery. This present is immense, yet humble, all-inspiring, yet gentle, limitless, yet intimate, tender, yet personal. I know that I am known. Everything in my life is transparent in this present. It knows everything about me. All my weaknesses, brokenness, sinfulness, and still loves me infinitely. This presence is healing, strengthening, refreshing, just by its presence. It is not judgmental, self-giving, seeking no reward, boundless in compassion. It is like coming home to a place I should have never left, to an awareness that has something always there, but which I did not recognize. I cannot force this awareness or bring it about. The door opens within me, but from the other side, I seem to have tasted this mysterious sweetness of this enveloping, permeating presence. It is both emptiness and fullness at once. We wait patiently in silence, openness, and quiet attentiveness, motionless within and without. We surrender to the attraction to be still, to be loved, just to be. How shallow are the things that upset us and discourage us. I resolve to give up my desires that trigger my tormenting emotions. Having just tasted the true peace, I can let them go by. Of course, I will still stumble and fall. I know my weaknesses, but I will rise again, for I know my goal. I know where my home is.
Thank you.